You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kara Warren, and on today's episode, we have Shauna Davis, an award-winning cheesemaker, chef, culinary educator, and buttermonger. Based in Sonoma, California, her catering company, Epicurean Connection, offers cheese education and butter classes. Shauna, welcome to the show.
Thank you for hosting me today, all the way from Sonoma, California.
Yes, I love it. I love that recording virtually, online, we are allowed to get guests from all over the country. So this is truly a treat. I'm very excited to chat with you today. I want to bring up right away, because I got to read your awesome book about butter mongering and butter compound butters. Who is a butter monger exactly?
So a butter monger is someone who makes butter and also makes compound butter. So they flavor it with, and technically in the past, it was by the season. So whatever was growing in the season became a compound butter. And if you go back to LaRousse and all the historical cooking companies and old chefs, they always had a compound butter. Whatever dish they served, seafood, meat, cheese, they always had a butter compound.
And where did this derive from? Because it sounds like there was a history. Is there a certain country? Is there a certain place in Europe, I'm guessing, that this came from?
Definitely came from France, where they had a copious amount of beautiful butters, and which is high in protein, high in fat. And in order for the chefs to be able to preserve it, they would flavor it and then save it to serve at a later date. And so the French were definitely ahead of making compound butters to serve at their restaurants or for their private estates, or at that time, castles. So it's really fascinating when you look into the history of compound butters.
Yeah, I'm really excited to kind of break down certain flavors later in the episode and learn a little bit more about the technique of making compound butter. But I'd like to take a little bit of a back step and sort of figure out, like, where did your interest in butter start? Because I like the story. What I read in your book, The Buttermonger, you had such a cool story about when you first started liking butter. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So in Sonoma Valley, where I've grown up in Sonoma, California, and in our high school, you have the opportunity to take a mentor or a work education job. So I took a job with MFK Fisher, the author, Mary Frances, and she would have me work on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays so that she could host her hospitality events on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And if I knew then what I know now, I would have stayed Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But she would have me go harvest the herbs, we would make the butter, and then we would plate it in ramekins or form it into logs or form it into cubes. And the butters were all very distinct in how she wanted to serve them per evening, per dish, per meal. And so that's how I really learned how to make a chive butter, a lemon butter. And we would go out and pick the Meyer lemons. We would pick the chives from the field. And so I feel really lucky that even though at 14, I wasn't really aware of what I was learning, but now at 54, I'm so glad that's what I learned.
Yeah, what an inspiration and a mentor to have. MFA Fisher is one of my favorite food authors. And I like that you were able to call her Miss Mary Frances. That is really adorable. What is some of the best advice she's ever given to you?
She said always taste your food and enjoy. And she said, even if you don't like it, enjoy what you made, whether you like it or not. And I so much appreciate that, because even in the catering now, if I make a dish, it's like, meh. It's not my favorite, but I can hear her saying, like, but appreciate the work you put into your dish and now elevate it. How can you repair that? How can you fix that? How can you add a component to it that would add to the flavor and complete the dish?
So I was going to ask you about that. She taught food presentation was important to her, and she studied a lot of, I believe she had a lot of history in France as well. Is this all relating to she sort of did that thing like Julia Child, where she learned so much from the French, right? And then she sort of brought it back here. Is that what she did at her parties and in her food presentation?
Absolutely. And of course, keeping in mind, please, Kara, that I was 14. So what I knew then is not what I know now. And she would have me making bouquet garnis, like going out and harvesting the herbs, tying them together. Or she would have me make a 3-2-1, which was her vodka drink. And I learned all kinds of skills of mirepoix, how to make a bouquet garni, how to slice meats, how to poach salmon. And if I knew then what I know now, it was an amazing education to learn from her.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, I just love that you've had that history with her. And then you mentioned she taught you about the compound butters. Can you remind me again, what was the flavor that she was most into? Was it like a maitre d' hotel like version, or was it something else?
Maitre d' hotel that she learned in France, which was tarragon based with lemon. And that became her base of her fish dishes, her scallops. And then the second one, once she learned about the Meyer lemons from Luther Burbank, he brought in Meyer lemons. Meyer lemon became her favorite flavor at that time. When I was cooking, we just had copious amounts of Meyer lemon to prepare dishes for her weekend entertainment. And again, I look back and I wonder who attended those parties, and I see the pictures. And I had the honor of recurating her home, as it had been sitting empty for many years. And we created the first meal at Last House, and we served compound butters over scallops, shrimp. And it was very reminiscent of cooking for MFK.
Oh my goodness. Delicious. Amazing. I love it. So this kind of gave you the advantage to culinary school. I'd imagine having this sort of internship, it gave you this perspective before. I wonder then, can you tell us, once you were in culinary school, where you did, like, for the ratio of butter to flavor, did you learn more at culinary school, or did you have that from MFK Fisher? What is, like, the best ratio, I guess, is what I'm looking for when it comes to making a great compound butter, of the butter to flavor ratio?
I'm going to say the compound butters came from MFK Fisher, and the second mentor that I had in Sonoma, which I feel very blessed, was Ig Vella of Vella Cheese, Ignacio Vella. And he too taught me how to make butter, and he taught me how to make cheese. And he was always talking to me about influential, and not like influencers now, but influential butters for menus during his era. So I learned how to make compound butters. And he would say, look around. What do you see? How can you flavor your butter? So not only did I go from MFK, Miss Mary Frances, to me, but I went to Ig Vella, Mr. Vella, to me. And he would be like, go out and pick an herb and we'll make a butter.
Oh, that's awesome. So you also have made butter fresh from milk with Mr. Vella, as you say. Yes. Are you still making butter on your own today as well as a buttermonger?
Yes, we have a butter bar at our cheese shop here in Sonoma. And we serve 5 butters a week, whether it's cow, goat, or sheep milk based. And the flavors vary per week with the season. And they're based on what the farmers bring to us through our door. And we work with all local farmers. We just received the Slow Food Award based on that we use local milk and local spices for our butters and cheese.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So in terms of making butter, do you feel, is one milk type easier than another?
I like working with the cow, but it's really fascinating to work with the goat. And I love working with the sheep milk. And I've just recently been introduced to water buffalo milk and yak milk. So I'm definitely always in my kitchen early in the morning playing with butters. And those are usually what my family eats at home. They're not necessarily what I sell to start until I've mastered the recipe itself.
Got it. And in terms of best-selling flavor at Epicurean Connection, what is the best flavor for you?
The best flavor is the Meyer lemon, which is a locally grown lemon from Luther Burbank, who was a horticulturist, viticulturist, and really built, if you've ever eaten Napa cabbage or you've had Meyer lemons, he was the founder of those products based in Sonoma County. But I have to say, working with a French butter with the high cream and the high fat, it really creates a beautiful, smooth texture of a butter. And so today, this morning, I made a Meyer lemon curd and mixed it with a French butter and 84% fat. And it was like silky velvet texture with a hint of lemon and minimal sugar. And it's like you wanted to have a croissant, you wanted to have a scone, you would like a glass of champagne.
Ooh, very nice. So do you feel that French butters are easier to make, like they work better for compound butters? Is that generally what is the case?
I would say the French butters, based on the consistency of high cream and high butterfat, they're easier to cook with. We have a couple American producers that are doing that, but the French consistently provide, from the Canal Chos to the Alps, they offer us these consistent high fat butters that really are easy to cook with and a pleasure to work with. And they create such a silky texture. And I mean, to know that you're going to get a minimum of 80% fat and or butter solids is amazing, but the average is 82%.
Right, right. And also I feel like for a price point, like when you're buying butter, it also comes in a lot less. I know even though it's coming from Europe, sometimes I feel like it is less expensive to buy a French butter than to buy a local butter, which is I know it's insane, but do you feel that's the case on California? I'm talking about the East Coast perspective.
No, I totally agree with you. And it's ridiculous to think that and I love it because I end up buying them, a French butter at my local marketplace versus a local butter because the price point is good. And I tend to buy up and freeze. And when I do buy French butter and I see a good deal, I freeze it and I put it in a Ziploc bag so that it doesn't acquire any freezer flavor. And I keep it in my freezer to then pull out and make butters for my chefs.
You know, you beat me to the question on storing butter because I do feel like when a butter is too long, set too long in a refrigerator, it takes on that that fridge taste, right? So what is your best storage tips? You said freezing butter. And then in a normal refrigerated space, is there any other special things to know?
Well, I have to say not everyone has just a butter and cheese fridge. So if you're at home and you have a home fridge, I would recommend when you buy the French butter and you keep it if you're not going to work with it yet, put it in the cube in a Ziploc and seal it and then write the date and the brand of butter that you purchased. And there's all kinds of different French butters that you can find, but make sure you date it. And that way by sealing in a Ziploc, it doesn't absorb any of your freezer flavors for whatever else your family may have put in.
Right.
And then you're able to pull the butters out and work with them upon request when you're making a recipe.
Right. And so you just think it's best to save it for the freezer. Don't like hold it in the fridge too long ever. It's like maybe within a week you should use it or something like that.
I would say 2 weeks when you keep it in the refrigerator. And keep in mind, our home refrigerators are not as clean as we think them are. So I want to protect the butter and the essence of the butter flavors themselves. And so even if you put it in your refrigerator, I still recommend putting it in a Ziploc bag or a glass crock. And you look back in time, Karen, everybody had butter crocks. And that's why, because they wanted to preserve the flavor. They didn't want it to acquire your marinara sauce, your beurre blanc, or anything that you cooked that you put in warm in your refrigerator. The butter with the proteins and the fat solids absorb all the flavors. So by sealing it and not allowing it to absorb any flavors, you have a pure, beautiful butter.
Totally. No, I love that tip. I think it also applies to cheese as well. I tell people all the time, I'm like, you either have to use it or eat it right away because everything is porous. It's alive. It's going to, you know, it's going to take on those nuances of whatever's in your fridge. So, for better or worse, you got to protect the butter or the cheese that you have. So I'd like to segue now to your best tips for making compound butters, like in regards to the technique. Should the butter be tempered, like should it be room temp, and what equipment is the best for blending the butter? Because when I was reading your book, The Buttermonger, you said you tried everything. So I was curious, what was the best way to go about making a compound butter?
I have tried everything from our Girl Scout days of shaking a jar to a Ziploc to now I have gone to, for my classes, I use a food processor, a Cuisinart, and you put in a quart of whipping cream and you blend it, and it goes from pouring whipping cream like you and I might put in our coffee in the morning, right, Kara?
Mm-hmm.
And then it moves to whipping cream, which I would prefer to put on strawberries. And then it moves to like a creme fraiche texture, which you can save and preserve if you want to make a creme fraiche with some salmon. And then it moves into a butter. It breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the butter curds, and that's where you have a fresh butter from the cream. And that's where I get the 911 calls where people are like, it didn't work, it broke. And I'm like, no, please take the cheesecloth, which is also known as a flour sack, a 200 count flour sack or cheesecloth. And you can order them anywhere online and they're called flour sack. And you put the butter curds into the cheesecloth and you drain the whey out. And you now have this beautiful 1 pound round of beautiful, elegant butter. And that's where you have the choice to salt it. Mm-hmm. And you can also add a culture to it and make a cultured butter by adding a creme fraiche culture. And so you have a cultured butter, but it's a beautiful way to make a fresh butter.
Oh, awesome. And then if we do the lazy man's version, which is you buy a nice bar of French butter, let's say.
And so you go to the grocery store. Yes. You buy a beautiful bar of butter, mm-hmm. and you bring it to room temperature.
Okay.
Puree it in your food processor, mm-hmm. and you add in the ingredients. Like the butters I sent you, you have a Meyer lemon, mm-hmm. a cherry, and a wild mushroom.
Ah, okay. So my taste buds did not lie to me. I was trying to pinpoint because they only had numbers on it, or maybe I was just crazy and missed the titles, but I was like,
oh, no, they only had numbers. You were totally on point.
Okay, good. So I was like, I think this is cherry. And I was very excited when I saw that in your book because I noticed you mentioned that it goes well for winemakers and red wine. So that I was very excited to see that one was one of the samples you sent to me. So that was cool.
Yes, so if I'm going to make a butter, if I take a 1 pound block of French butter mm-hmm. and I bring it to room temperature, and once it's soft enough to puree, I cut it into 16 little taste bites, if you would, right? Mm-hmm. And then I puree it in the food processor. And once it's smooth and creamy, like it's all blending around, there's no more chunks left, I add in Meyer lemon zest, Meyer lemon juice, and or if that's not accessible to you, I add in lemon olive oil.
Mm.
And that's what makes your beautiful Meyer lemon butter that you can enjoy.
Oh, delicious. Okay. Now I was wondering if we put a few different butters in front of you, like, and it was a blind taste test, could you tell the differences between the butters? Like, could you say, oh, this is like a sweet cream butter. This is a cultured butter. Could you do that?
Yes. And it's really fun. And it's kind of a game on with my butter friends.
Yes. I would imagine. Yes. Because I really think, for a lot of my friends, when I give them like a cultured butter, it's always like they're enlightened. Don't you think? Like, it's absolutely. Just another level to it.
Absolutely. If you take a French cultured butter and show them that butter first, then all butters have to meet that expectation.
Exactly. I mean, I just think it's so much fun. So when you're shopping for butter in, say, a supermarket, are there certain things you look for on the labels?
Oh, for sure. I look for the fat content, the butter solids, so 80, 82, 84%. Mm-hmm. And French, of course, 82% minimum. So they're always going to rise up to the top in my purchasing based on the cream content, the butter, fat, solids. And I know that that's what I'm going to use to cook with.
Okay. And you can use cultured butter or higher butter fat for any kind of baking. It's okay?
I would say so. I've been quizzing patisseries around the country. And my friend Jean-Yves Charron, he's a French patisserie, and he prefers French butter. He's, of course, French, hence his name, Jean-Yves. Mm-hmm. And he makes croissants that he freezes and ships around the country. And he uses 100% French butters, 84%. And if they don't have it, he's not making his croissants.
Oh, yeah. No, I would imagine. Yeah. Especially when you're making croissants, it's like the game changer is that you have like a very high quality butter. It's just one of the things to know the butter sheets and to know the quality of that butter sheet, if it's from France, is going to be the best. So that's very cool.
And Kara, if you ever come out to the West Coast, I would take you to his laboratory at his bakery because he's constantly testing and tasting the different butters of Europe.
Oh, really? Cool.
And so he is only French, only Europe, and he will use those butters. And so he'll have me come in. Come in, Shanita. Come in and taste these butters.
No.
And I taste them, and he wants to know which one is the one he should order. And they're always French butters.
Oh, my goodness. I love it. I mean, so I would love to, yeah, I'll let you know. The second I'm out there, we'll go say hello.
How often do you get a French tasting with a French chef? And it's amazing. And so I've really mirrored him in my butter-making classes. So we introduce our guests starting with a French butter, an American butter, and a fresh butter. But awesome. We start their palate with a French butter to let them know this is how your butter should be.
Very cool. And I mean, in regards to French butter, I actually wanted to kind of have you ever had the chance to taste and compare the different AOP versions back to back? I was curious if you had ever done that before.
I have. And during COVID, I was doing a lot of tasting, and I would get shipments shipped to me, and I would taste them, and they were like my butter samples. I sent you 1, 2, 3,
mm-hmm.
and I would taste them, give my analysis, and then email my tasting notes back without knowing what I was tasting. And it was fascinating.
Ooh, and I love that.
I have to say it was one of the very, very few perks of COVID is that I did a lot more tasting at home. And I feel like I was actually more focused because I was not at a food show. I wasn't entertained by someone I was with. I wasn't trying to get to another booth. I was actually in my kitchen tasting those 3 to 5 butters and enjoying them, which is how I met Laura, tasting European butters.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Taste of Europe Butter of France campaign is something that I'm aware of. And it's a very cool campaign. They have a website online. They have an Instagram. They have a where to buy section. So if people are having a hard time finding the butters, it's a really nice source for education and to like help find these butters that, you know, for certain areas are not the easiest to get. But, you know, everyone's trying to help get the word out there, which is really cool. So for the listeners out there, I just thought I'd do a quick read through of the three different AOP butters. Yeah, absolutely. So, and Shauna, dive into any of these if you want to mention anything. So the first one that I have is the Beurre de Senie, which was awarded AOP protection in 1986. One of the prime producers is the Senie Sainte-Mère, located in the northwest of France. Other versions of the butter sold in the U.S. from the Normandy, Brittany area are Paysan Breton, Rodolphe Meunier, and Président. Then the second AOP region, which I haven't had too much, tried it yet. I'd like to try it one day, is the Beurre de Bresse, which is in the east of France, more towards the Jura area. And that was in 2014, it was awarded AOP protection. And lastly, there's the Beurre Charentaise Poitou, which is the first one in 1979. And the versions of that are Echerie, Lescure, Servet-Belle, Pompli. And these are located more in the central west part of France. And it tends to be more of a lighter butter, I understand, whereas the Beurre de Senie is more of a heavy set butter.
The Beurre de Senie is like this rich, creamy that coats your tongue with cream. It's elegant and beautiful.
Yes, yes. I mean, so that was one of the things you picked up, that the Beurre de Senie was a heavy butter, and then Charentaise Poitou was lighter, I take it?
Yes, so the first one was really like it coated your palate and it sat on your palate in the most elegant way.
Oh, that's so cool. See, that's, I mean, I'm very fortunate to have a lot of Normandy butter, so I'm glad that you've had the chance as well. So can we say, I feel like I'm leading this question, but tell me, why do you think French butter is considered better than American butters?
Well, I think they have the history for one. And I think that most really educated consumers admire history and how they produce them over time. And I think the French butters have really made a point of educating our consumers, whether it's French, American, you know, Chinese, they want to share the education of the French butters, and there's no one else doing that. And so I think by the time they reach the chefs and the bakers and the consumers, they have a whole program to educate you on tasting a French butter and enjoying the 80, 82, 84% butter. And there's nothing like that being done.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, it has that history and the know-how, which is just when you have over 100 years of butter making, it kind of works out, I think. Okay, Shauna, we're going to take a quick break. Hey, everyone, you're listening to Cutting the Curd. I have Shauna Davis on the show. I'm Kara Warren, and we will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills combined with the freshest milk available created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren. I have Shauna Davis on the show, expert buttermonger, butter maker, cheese maker, lady of all butter in the U.S. She's kind of explaining to us the breakdowns in the different milks, the different fats, how to use, how to take care of your butter, because we should not overlook butter.
No, right? Not at all. I have to say, I want to give credit to, during COVID, my daughter and I wrote this book, and my daughter is now 30. And she's a cheesemaker, butter maker by osmosis, if you would. So because she grew up with it, she knows how to make butter. She knows how to make cheese. She can teach butter classes, cheese classes. But when I said, hey, Karina, how about we write a book? And so it was the most really warm, enchanting. Every Sunday morning, we would get on Zoom and write this book. And we would each make butter compound recipes and talk about a friendship between a mother and daughter. And I think it may be one of the first mother-daughter books out, and especially about butter. So I just want to point that out, that we are a woman-owned business, and it's my daughter and I, and we're already working on our second book.
Oh, excellent. See, I was going to ask you about that, what it was like to work with your daughter. It sounds like it was a good experience. Was there any pushback on any recipes ever that you were both like, no, I don't know?
There was a couple that we would play with and we weren't sure. Like, I was hesitant at first with the Girl Scout cookie butters.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But my little Girl Scout Elise is adorable, and her dad is a winemaker. And so we made Girl Scout cookies and paired them with wines, and it took off.
Oh.
And so that was really fun. And my daughter, being part Chinese, she really wanted to go down the umami route, mushrooms and chili crisp. And so we were kind of a good combo, in the sense of we each had a different palette of how we wanted to write the book.
Absolutely. So there were some unexpected flavors. You're saying like the miso one was like a little bit different. And I mean, I saw the ones that I liked, at least the wild mushroom and dried chanterelle looking butter recipe. I thought that was very cool.
That is number three for you.
Yes, yes, yes. And then I also noticed crispy prosciutto butter seems to be a fan favorite. I'd like to try to make that one day. How did that come about?
That came about at the end of a catering job. And it really is truly with humor, catering. And if you've ever worked in a kitchen, you slop everything into a bowl to take home.
Mm-hmm.
And it had slices of prosciutto, which we had got and baked in the oven. So it was crispy like bacon. And we had the butter from the table and we put it in a bowl. And my daughter and I at the same time were like, crispy butter prosciutto? That sounds delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we went home and we didn't use that butter and prosciutto. We went home, crisped more prosciutto that night, like late at night, made butter and mixed it together. And it was amazing.
Oof, yeah. Sounds really good. I'm excited to try it one day.
I hope you do, and please let me know how you enjoy it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, now I wanted to bring up an idea, and you can just tell me it's a crazy one if you want. But in the U.S., you know, the legalization of cannabis has happened in some states, and I was curious, you know, because you're in California, has there been a chance for you to experiment with any cannabis butters? Is that interesting to you? How does that work in your buttermonger world?
So yes, I have done several consulting on making butters for cannabis companies, and two of my butters, I've signed a confidentiality contract, so I can't say where, but I've created four butters for two different cannabis companies to sell in their retail spots.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And I guess more to the extent of course, don't talk about which companies they are, but more like in terms of working with cannabis and butter, is French butter a better one? I know that's a funny question, but I really don't know how to make a cannabis butter. And I have had friends who have tried to make cannabis butters. And I think there's some trickiness to this because, like, you don't want to cook the cannabis too much when you blend. I don't know. What are your words of wisdom on this?
So with humor, if I may share with you, Kara. So growing up as a hippie kid of West Coast California, my dad made all of the pot butters and they were terrible.
Right.
So now we're working on cannabis butters for chefs that actually grow the cannabis, and we make a flavored butter for them that they have a dish in mind how they're going to serve it. And anyone that says they're not going to be part of the cannabis business is missing the boat, because that's a huge part of the West Coast productivity and economics, but also their consumer base. They want to learn. They want to make butters. They want to know what to do. They want to learn how to make butters and flavor them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a strength for any of the food communities to look at that aspect. And, you know, butter is an easy one, especially with that, I think. But I'm glad that you're able to consult about it. And that's exciting. I look forward to any cool recipe ideas or ideas you have in the future about that.
I'm always glad to share recipes with our guests. They can look at our website, buttermonger.com.
Oh, great.
And you'll see some recipes at tasteeurope.com. And of course, they're always able to reach out to me to the Epicurean Connection in Sonoma. And I will be in New York in the late summer doing some butter classes. So stay tuned when I'm in your region, Kara, and I hope that you'll be my guest.
Absolutely. I'd love to. Yes.
Yes.
That would be great.
It's been an honor to be on your show, and thank you for providing all the AOP and AOC butter information, because that is really important for people to understand. And yes, as a chef, going all the way back to my teenage years with MFK Fisher, and my granddad was a chef, and he loved French butters. And they would wait at bay for French butters during the Depression era, so they could have butters. And even after then, anytime they got French butter, it was like a partay to them.
Ooh, yes. Luxury. I love that. That's a very good point, actually. I wanted to ask you, now that the book is published, and where can people find it?
They can buy it on buttermonger.com, on amazon.com, and ebay.com.
Okay, great. And I know you just mentioned a few of the things you have coming up this year, but is there any other food shows or conferences that people should look out for you at?
Definitely at the American Cheese Society in July. And then I'll be doing a Wisconsin tour where I'll be at Car Valley, different cheese plants. And then look for me at the Natural Expo East, which will be in East Coast. We don't know where yet. Mm-hmm. So you'll find me all over the board. And I look forward to making butter. And like when I come to Wisconsin, I'll ship all my equipment out and I'll make butter and share. And when I come to New York, I cannot wait. There's so many great cheese shops, butcher shops, butter shops that I can't wait to share with you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. Okay. Awesome. Thank you, Shauna, for coming on the show today. This was great.
Kara, you're a pleasure, and enjoy the book and make some butters. And please, all of our listeners, please enjoy some butter.
Awesome. Okay, great. I'm going to give a few details on where they can find more info about you, Shauna. So thank you again. So please follow Shauna on Instagram at Shauna Davis. So it's going to be spelled Shaana Davis. Or you can go to her website at buttermonger.com. For more information about the French butters we discussed today, please visit it on Instagram at Taste Europe Butter of France. And check out the where to buy section, of course. You got to eat these butters. They're so good. And then also, you can follow us at Cutting the Curd and myself at Kara Warren. And please listen and subscribe to Cutting the Curd via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you, and eat more cheese. Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.